Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom. I am Josh Pleiser, the owner and lead writer. You may notice that my voice is sounding a little bit differently this week. The headset that I used last week wasn't working properly, so I had to send it back, and hopefully I should have a new one for next week's cast. And that's pretty apropos, because tonight we're talking about sound design. My guest this week, first artist for Smokebeat Games and Game Wisdom site designer, Kenneth Ohm.
Hey there.
A freelance composer who also does music and sound design for Smokebeat Games, Danny Barclay.
Hello.
And our special guest this week, a composer who has worked on several video game soundtracks and movies, including the, I believe it's recently released, Infamous Second Son, Mark Canyon.
Hello.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Danny. It's great to meet you guys.
Hi, to meet you too.
So I was telling Mark before the cast, normally on Game Wisdom, we deal specifically with game design in the industry and don't really delve too much into music. However, it is a very important part on developing a game, and we've seen how important, how great a good soundtrack can elevate a title. And I figure that for this cast, it'll be interesting to talk about that, and I'm sure that our listeners will be interested as well, because it's not really an explored area or a popular topic that we see a lot of people talk about, right, Ken?
Definitely, and I have great interest because one of the best things, even if a game is bad, like those Final Fantasy games, the soundtracks still stand. They're still very good and very memorable. And to me, like, you know, I do all this art and stuff, but I really appreciate music. So when I hear or I talk to a composer, they're like magicians to me.
Well, then this should be great for you, Ken, because we've got not one, but two on this week.
Exactly. Two magicians.
That's how I feel about coders.
All it's right. Very boring, that's what it is.
All right, so let's begin with some introductions. So, Danny, I know that you're friends with Ken and you do work for Smokebeat, so we'll start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of, I come from a classical background of composition. Did undergrad, master's, and now doing the PhD at Queen's University Belfast. Mm-hmm. And on the side, I just like to do various little projects, such as like with Smugbee, with Ken doing like iPhone games and stuff. So yeah, I like to do a bit of everything, but like currently I'm doing the PhD.
Cool. All right. And Mark, could you tell us a little bit about your background, some of the games you work on, and maybe a little bit about your style of music that you like to compose?
Sure, sure. Well, I sort of consider myself quite an instinctive composer musician. I sort of play a lot of instruments now quite badly rather than one really, really well. But I did grow up being a classical guitarist. But as I've got more and more into composition, I wasn't really that interested in playing other people's music, and I just naturally lent towards writing music. And I think that's partly because there was a lot of soundtracks lying around at home, and I got really into film scores at a very young age. And so I did the thing, you know, where you join bands and you, mm-hmm. you know, you have a deal with the label, you go on a little tour, you see how that's like, and then, you develop your style. So I guess I was always, someone who was into writing music that had, quite a cerebral edge to it. Mm-hmm. And always trying to explore how I could develop a unique voice rather than a mimic, which, you know, a lot mm-hmm. of sounds I would, you know, are quite obvious to spot where their influences come from. And influence isn't a bad thing, but I think it's as a composer, I think your job is to interpret your influences into something new and forward thinking. So after the band period of my life, I sort of fortunately landed a game that did really well. That was Driver 2, and we did some music on that, and it kind of snowballed from there in a very short period of time, where I was a gamer at that period of my life, an intensive gamer at that period of my life, and I always sort of saw film as the thing that I would love to end up doing if I could possibly do it. But like most people in their young, you know, early 20s, it's like, how do you break into these worlds? And I had the lucky break, as I said, doing Driver, and off the back of that, several other projects finished, and a career began, you know, in a very spontaneous fashion. And I think that's kind of how my life in the last 15 years has led out really in quite a spontaneous, instinctive fashion. And I try and import that into my music wherever possible, really, to make it interesting for me to write and for people to listen to.
So what advice would you give for any composer out there, or musician out there that wants to get into the industry? Like, how would you, if you were to start again your career now, yeah, how would you think you'd go about it?
I think I was lucky getting into games when I got into games in terms of working in them, because it was the period that we went from the PS1 to the PS2, and all of a sudden real audio was a serious consideration, and all I knew how what to do was how to work in a recording studio, and so I couldn't program a chip. I wouldn't even know what you were talking about in 1999 if someone said that to me. So I wasn't technically proficient on that side of things, but I think in terms of advice nowadays, it's very much have your own voice. I think it's there's a lot of music out there that's kind of wallpapery, and although there are some projects where that's, you know, okay, that's what's needed. If you have aspirations of being an artistic composer, then I think it's really important to establish what your voice is as a composer. And then on the other hand, there's the sort of what I call production composers who are really good at mimicking other people's work and then putting a little twist on it. But sometimes it's not much of a twist, but, they're the kinds of people that have really good technical knowledge in how to work in a studio and work with an orchestra or ensembles or in front of in copies of Cubase or whatever. But they have a large part of their brain is focused on production rather than creating something especially new. Mm-hmm. And both are valid. You know, but I think to break into the industry, you've got to be really good at one or the other. I was lucky that I sort of partnered up with a producer when I was very young, and he had the ability to provide some of that production skill that I didn't have. I had raw ideas. So I think collaboration is a good thing and can keep you on your toes and keep you fresh. So if you've got any partners in crime, if you wanted to get into this world, I think it's quite nice if you're starting out from zero to maybe team up with a few people and see where those collaborations go, because when you're young and a bit wet behind the ears, there is an element to having strength in numbers, you know, in as you start out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we see a similar idea with the video game industry of getting that collaboration going, and it's really becoming a big trend in terms of indie developers, because it's becoming a lot easier for, you know, 2-3 guys get one of the main game development softwares out there and basically sit there and try to make something together.
Right, yeah. And there's a big attachment for independent artists too. They're always looking for someone to compose something for their games or their one-shot game or whatever, and that could lead, like you said, to a, you know, random explosion of random contract work and soundtracks and games under your belt.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's my first question for both Mark and Danny. I bet this is something that I know a lot of people may be interested in. When you have the title of composer on a video game soundtrack, what aspects or what does that entail? Because I bet a lot of people may not exactly know what's the difference between someone who composes music versus someone who does, you know, sound effects and et cetera.
Well, I mean, there's sound designers and there's composers and then there's audio programmers. Mm-hmm. And they kind of work together, sometimes not very closely, but each person can affect each other's results quite dramatically. So a sound designer would be, you know, to put it rather crudely, the guy who sorts out the footsteps and the sound of the wind and, and the door closing or the arm breaking, which is commonly a watermelon being hit with a baseball bat. and then the composer, well, composer's a funny one, and I'm interested to see what Danny thinks on this as well, because I see a lot of people in the games industry who kind of don't know what they are in that sphere. They kind of sometimes do programming, they sometimes do a bit of sound design, and they sometimes do a bit of composition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of charming in a way, that you've got that frontline approach when you're making the game, that you're mucking in and you're getting your hands dirty in all sorts of area. But you wouldn't see that in the film industry ever. The tasks are very defined and separated out, and it's regarded as special. You know, specialism is a very important thing. And I think it might be to do with how the video games industry comparatively is quite young to the film industry. So it's got this slightly more frenetic hand-to-mouth development cycle. And that's not to say films don't get frenetic either, but it has a sort of different feel to it working in both of those industries. There's a versatility to the average audio guy in a video games company that you wouldn't tend to find in the post-production process of making a film.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, I would definitely agree with that. It seems like especially in smaller games, there would be more of a crossover because, you know, smaller team, one guy has to do more roles. But yeah, and I think there is a contrast with the film industry, because I remember a story about, I think it was Star Wars Episode 3, and basically the final cut of the movie happened after the soundtrack had been done, and so there was missing music that had to be filled in by the sound designer, essentially cutting up other parts of John Williams' music and like linking it together. And there was a big controversy about that. So the fact that people, you know, weren't used to that probably is indicative that that doesn't happen in the film industry very often.
I've seen it happen in films as well on more than one occasion, and I know the story you're talking about. I think the impact on that story is because it's John Williams.
Yeah.
Nobody messes with John Williams. He's like an exec producer kind of on his films in a way sometimes. You know, he wields a lot of power, but apparently, you know, he's a charming guy, but he's a charming guy who knows exactly what he wants. And he rarely gets messed with, and nor should he at that ripe old age that he is, and having done everything he's done, he's a legend. But the process of making a game, it's kind of in film it's in stages, in game it's sort of this beast that grows and grows and grows and grows and grows, and then it all sort of climaxes at the end where there's this game where, in fact, you know, after the shoot and the editor of a film has done his first cut, there's a film there. You know, we could watch that film, and it, you know, if some music was temped on it before the composer had his time on it, that would be a film you could really watch. But in a game, you know, halfway through the development cycle, you couldn't sort of hand that game to someone and say, there you go, there's the game. It's sort of like that. what's happening? Crashing all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
Before we talk a little bit more about the differences between film and game when it comes to composing, could you tell the audience any like movies that they may have heard that you worked on?
The most well-known one that I did was the one that starred Gemma Arterton, who was also in Prince of Persia and several other, and James Bond, and that was called The Disappearance of Alice Creed. They're all indie films. I mean, I haven't done a studio film yet, although I'm lined up to do a couple in the next 12 months, which is exciting.
Awesome.
By studio, I mean over in your part of the world in Hollywood. So it's I'm a sort of quite an established games composer, somewhere nearing the top of the ladder in that respect, I guess, in terms of what I've done. Although every day feels different and new, but in films I'm very much at the bottom of that ladder. You know, I'm at very different stages. So hopefully in sort of 5 years' time we can ask that question again and go, oh yeah, I love that film soundtrack.
Now, you mentioned that one of the key differences between movies and games, that in the movie you're given like pretty much a very like rigid script or a very set idea what the music's going to be like for the movie, while the video games, it's more of an evolving process. Things can change and grow over time. Are there any other interesting differences or advantages and disadvantages between the two mediums?
I guess the big one, and I'm sure Danny will agree, is the interactivity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the key thing, that when I speak to somebody who who likes music and may have maybe in the film industry or what, but when I explain to them the job of a video games composer, they're like, Christ, how on earth do you manage that? So yeah, what do you think of that, Danny?
Yeah, it's too totally like, if you didn't really think about it, you might think they're just the same thing, but it's complete almost opposite, you know, whereas in a film there's a linear narrative structure, a video game can do sort of anything, and you have to somehow accommodate for that, so it's very different.
Yeah, I think there's actually some like technical issues that come along with it too, because I remember like the latest Thief reviews, there's a lot of moments with cutscenes where the battle music would continue on during the cutscene and then ruin the cutscene along with it. Because the music, because the combat music was so oppressive, right? So like all that kind of stuff kind of factors in, because you might have it set in a certain scenario in your head, and the programmers do too. But because of technical flaws, it can help hurt the game overall because of the way it's put together.
Was that a bug then?
Yeah, that was a big bug. It was, but the game was kind of rushed, right? It was in development hell for a while, and there's a lot of technical things wrong with the game, and that was one of the big puns is that. The score not kind of matching up with the action, and sometimes it going into different scenes where it shouldn't be. So yeah.
I think the film in comparison is so straightforward to work on. You know, it's all about your ideas, and they never, you know, once it's on the film. That's it. You haven't got, you know, the film's never going to change all of a sudden as you're watching it. Whereas with the video game, I mean, the complexity in which some teams go into in their interactivity is gobsmacking. And I'm pleased sometimes that when I do work with teams that are that sort of involved in crafting the music as much as they can, like a filmic experience. I'm so pleased that I'm not the person who actually has to go into my cues at the end and cut them to pieces and make them fit. I mean, the level of detail on something like Far Cry or on Second Son, you know, on the Second Son that's coming out, I think tomorrow actually. It's astounding, you know. And I don't have that attention to detail on that side. It doesn't get me out of bed in the morning doing that kind of thing. I like building the sound that people then can go off and cut up and create this awesome interactive experience with. But the hours involved in doing that are really intensive hours and very, very long. And although I have done it, I'm pleased when I'm working with a team who give me the creative freedom just to create great music, you know, that works. And then they then reinterpret it into the game in a way that really works. Because it's very difficult for myself, for the types of games that I work on, to sit there for hours implementing. It really is a kind of in-house role, that thing. It's amazing how much detail goes into video game soundtracks on that side compared to film. You know, film is very, very easy in comparison on that front.
And I think in the future we'll appreciate, I think, because right now, because film is an older medium, people respect people that do scores for films more than games, but I think in the future it's going to be the opposite, where we give a lot of, you know, credit to game composers and artists that do work on games, because it is such an intensive, different kind of experience, and there's a lot more they have to deal with and factor in. And those soundtracks, those game soundtracks, stand test of time, or at least in people's memories, a lot more than some of the soundtracks that were done for multiple AAA films.
Yeah,
it's a bit like an editor, the sort of respect that they get in the film world. You know, someone who edits the film together. It's a kind of similar talent, I think, in knowing where the music works. Or it's like a cross between a music editor and a technical programmer, you know, in a video for the video games, and those people they're really special. The ones that are good.
There's actually some games that kind of programmatically create the music or factor in different like loops, which is if you guys remember Payday the Heist, Because like that was all based on like programmable cues, but it also had a pretty kicking soundtrack.
Yeah. I would say video games have gotten at least some appreciation over the last decade. We saw the Video Game Lives concert sort of take, where they basically do live orchestral playings of classic video game soundtracks. I think Nintendo had like a special one for Legend of Zelda a few years ago too.
Yeah. That's great. I think video game scores are getting more and more recognized. You can see that because loads of Hollywood guys are trying to get into games as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I started, it was snubbed up. You know, if I walked into a room of artistic composers and said I did video games, I would be like I would be the bastard son of that room.
Black sheep.
I know that game music is on a pedestal very, very close to how film music is regarded, and it won't be too long until you discuss them in the same breath with equal admiration, you know.
Yeah, and speaking about sort of how video games have evolved from being that black sheep, I've heard a similar story about a voiceover war, people who do voiceovers for like cartoons, anime series, stuff like that. I remember hearing like for most of like the 90s, it was considered, you know, the black sheep, you know, the thing you wouldn't talk about. I've even heard stories of several like famous voice actors and actresses like Steve Bloom, who they went under a different name because they didn't want, you know, their professional name to be associated with, oh, I did this cartoon. And conversely, today it's now a completely different thing. We're seeing voiceover people get recognized, win awards, and as you said, more, it's sort of like video games and cartoons and whatnot, they've sort of evolved from being, you know, hokey and, you know, people to view as like child's play to now not only being big business, but being a very creative outlet for a lot of people.
And you can see that with how much people are starting to spend on their soundtracks, you know, guys are flying over from the States to sit in Abbey Road for a week recording 70 players every day. That's not cheap, you know. There's definitely, the bar has been raised, which is a great thing, and it's only going to increase, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm. And Danny, besides working with Ken with Smokey, do you do music for like any like films or any other media?
I've done a couple of short films, but it's hard to sort of spend a lot of time, you know, trying to find that sort of work when you've actually, you know, most of my time is just doing this degree. But I've done a few like short films, you know, like very sort of indie stuff.
Okay. All right. This next question I think is for both of you. And I guess this goes back to sort of differences between film and game. When someone asks you, I guess, to make a soundtrack for a film or a game or whatever, how does that like entail in terms of like, do they tell you, we want this to be, you know, a romantic soundtrack, we want this to be, you know, high octane action, or do they effectively just like leave you alone and say, come up with a soundtrack and we'll review it when you're done?
You good, Danny?
I find it tends to be an iterative process. So they'll tell you, you know, they want a certain thing. They might give you an example of another track to listen to, and then you provide something, you do a sketch or a few demos, and they say, you know, it needs to be more, you know, whatever, it needs to be more this, more that, and then you refine it, and then you sort of build up the score that way. That's how I've found it.
Yeah. I think generally that idea of temping, which is providing other material that inspires either the game director or the audio director on a project is pretty common. I think that's probably the most frequent way in which it works. On Second Son, there was a development process that I haven't actually experienced before, in the way in which we were given a lot of experimental time to go away. It was almost about 5 months, in fact, where from the first thing that I wrote for the project to us sitting down and saying, yeah, that's the sound of the project, let's go forward with this, you know. And that was really nice because it was the artist developing the style with team rather than saying we want everything to sound like Black Hawk Down or whatever. It was a really refreshing process to be in, and probably the closest I've been to like working on an album, or you know, that a standalone album, rather, you know, that isn't for a film or a video game. It had that real gestation period that allowed the sound to develop and become a really good fit with how the game felt and looked and moved. So that was really good. I wish I had more of those opportunities, to be honest.
Was 5 months a good length of time for that, or did you almost feel by the end of that, you know, you were itching to just get writing music?
Well, I wasn't continuously writing music throughout that 5 month period. I would write for maybe a week, then we'd let it rest for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of that level of pace at the beginning. So, you know, maybe 10 minutes a month, let's say, of music. And I liked it because it really allowed you to sort of think about things in between time and go, crikey, why didn't I think of adding this kind of sound or recording these weird sounds and turning them into instruments? And it's very difficult. One of the things that really frustrates me, and actually is more common in film, is that you get a really short time frame to write a 60 to 80 minute soundtrack, typically. And you feel sometimes you feel at the end of it that you just wish you had more experimental time. And a large part of how I write is by experimenting and seeing what works. And very often it's the mistakes and the idiosyncrasies that shine through as the really characteristic features, rather than the long labored planned out bit of music that you know that sort of seems to be a little bit too prescribed. So through being given that experimental time, it felt quite luxurious, especially on a project that size, but it definitely enhanced the creativity.
Mm-hmm. Sort of gave you the time to make mistakes, you know, to find sort of stuff you wouldn't have just, you know, composed naturally.
I'd say 30 to 50% of that soundtrack probably wouldn't have had that sonic character if we weren't allowed just to hang around with the ideas a bit longer. Mm-hmm. So that's rare. I know that many projects can't afford that time to do that, and that's I totally understand that, but hey, if you're given the time to do it, I'm not gonna refuse it.
Now, when you worked on Far Cry 2 soundtrack, did you have a similar amount of time, or did it give you more or less to work on that?
I think Far Cry 2, I demoed for that project, and that people starting out, just be prepared to do lots of demos and being rejected, and I think rejection is probably the thing you have to learn to handle the most. Mm-hmm. In doing music in any media, to be fair, but I kind of hit the nail on the head with my demo, and I was really pleased with it. It felt it just came out the fingers in the right way at the time, and still when I listen to that first cue today, it's still got something about it that sounds fresh. So Far Cry, it was just a long, steady compositional process. Over about, I think that was about 12 to 14 months. There was a lot of music in Far Cry 2.
Mm-hmm.
And we just plowed through it. And there was a turning point actually in the last sort of third, where we wanted to make the percussive elements sound a bit different than they were currently. We wanted to give them a sense of being a little bit more intimate and in a more confined space, rather than sort of being slightly over-treated with reverbs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one thing that changed, but that was more of a production decision. That didn't affect my writing. That was more about how do we make what I've written sound as good as it can, and in the right vision. So Far Cry was a slightly different one. That was a bit more of a marathon, continuous writing exercise, whereas Second Son was quite spacious, really, in comparison.
Okay. Now, you mentioned how video games are different from films, and the fact that it is that iterative process, it's that ever-growing beast. So when you're writing or composing a soundtrack for a video game, are you given, like, specific reference materials? Like, do you look at game footage? Do they send you over, like, a game script or something just to give you some inspiration? Or, like a general guidance of what they're looking for.
Yeah, they got better in the last few years actually at providing actual game footage. I remember when I first started out, it was very much dealing with lots of different shades of grey and blocks moving around, and someone who's not used to giving an artistic brief to a composer giving an artistic brief to a composer, and there was that sort of slight moment of sort of scratching your head and wondering what they're talking about. But I personally quite like working with artwork. So I'm not dependent really, unless there's a cue for a cutscene that's very linear and is, you know, has no interactivity involved. I'm quite happy to do the in-game score with really good artwork for a large majority of it.
All right. I think this next question is for both of you again. So when you're actually finished, you have a soundtrack done, it's ready to go. When you're like showing it to the developers, or like who do you show to, like to get the final approval? Do you show it to like the actual game developers, the producer, or someone else?
I think audio directors are always my first sort of line that I have to cross. I don't know. How do you find it, Danny?
I haven't really worked on any games big enough to have, you know, so many different departments to check. So it would really be probably the game director, or maybe the audio guy, or could be, yeah, probably like what you said.
I think it depends on the audio director as well, because some audio directors you work with, and they're really talented on the tech side, and some audio directors are really talented on the creative side. And you don't often get them combining, but it does happen. But I can be crude for this interview and just say that let's say that's how it works. And so with the creative audio director who has a really good vision of the music, he'll probably liaise with you a lot more on whether something's right or wrong. And you won't be stopped by director or the, you know, the producer, because the audio director would be kind of trusted to make those decisions. When it's a more of a tech audio director guy, then often the director of the game and the producer would have a bit more say, or want to have a bit more say. So it can work both ways. In terms of getting approval on your cues. I mean, for Secret World, as an example, the director was really keen for me to nail a couple of key cues that he wanted. And once he'd heard those, he just said, right, great, to the audio director, Simon, just you guys get on with it now. You know what you're doing. So there was like an initial test. Mm-hmm. And then we just got on with doing the rest of the score.
Now, I guess another question for the two of you is, have you ever had cases where when you submit your final soundtrack and the person just says, no, I hate you, start from scratch? Or due to the fact that it is an iterative process, they have that idea that of what it's going to be throughout its development?
Yeah, I don't think I've never had anything like that, just because they would have had to have not heard it. Mm-hmm. To react that badly to it at the last step, but yeah, because it's iterative, they're hearing it, you know, every couple of different things that I've done, they'll hear it and they'll say yes or no, so you wouldn't get the whole thing scrapped at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very this is another quite interesting film comparison, because in films you often have quite high level audience testing going on, where if the audience comes back on a film and says, we love this, 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 and this, but the music sucks, the odds are, unless you've got a really strong director who does love the soundtrack and is supporting the composer, the odds are that composer will get sacked. And then they'll get somebody in to do an emergency soundtrack in a very short space of time. And that's happened on some exceptionally large films in the past.
I think that happened on Troy, didn't it? Was it Alex, something like Troy or Alexander?
Yeah, that happened on Troy. My orchestrator was one of the advisors on Troy for the historical references, and was working with Gabriel Yared, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and that cut him up badly. I heard a lot of stories after that, and from firsthand sources, that he was exceptionally proud of that soundtrack, and it got canned, and another guy came in and did it. But you know, a nice story is I was fortunate enough to be invited to Philip Glass's birthday party at his publisher's a year ago, and I'm a big Philip Glass fan, and it was just about 20 of us there, and he was playing a bit of piano, and then he was asked a question, you know, about films and how does he handle the pressure of working in the film world when he's, you know, he's also a classical composer who just writes according to what he wants to write.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got fired off a film and was walking down the street in LA. It's one of those stories. and then bizarrely, Danny Elfman was walking in the opposite direction, and he stops Philip Glass and just taps him on the shoulder and says, "Philip, Danny, what why are you looking so glum?" And he said, "I've just been fired off off a soundtrack." He says, "Ah, man, that happens every month. Don't worry about it." Carry on. And I don't think that made Philip feel any better, but. I think the fact is you in a film, you although you don't feel like it at the time, you've got enough time to turn something around. With a video game, usually the way that video game music is integrated into the code, to go back and piece it all apart and then re-implement it, you just can't do it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it really happens in games, or I've never heard of it happening at that stage where you know, right at the end of a project.
Okay.
Now that sounds like a fun birthday party.
It was amazing. I was walking on air for days afterwards. It was one of those bizarre ones. Just sort of happened. I'm not mates with Philip Glass, though. No, unfortunately, but he is a massive inspiration to the music that I write.
Or you can imply it to people, though. It's like, oh, that is party, because, you know.
I sort of tried
just hanging out as usual.
Normal. I tried to do that at the beginning, but I felt too guilty. Just, I'm not a celebrity hobnobber. I sit in my studio on my own for very long periods of time. That's the reality.
All right. Here's another question for both of you, and this just comes from my lack of experience in terms of composing. When you get a job to do either a film or a game, do you get paid like per song? Do you have like a contract that says that this soundtrack song would be 5 songs, 6 songs, whatever, and that's what you get paid for?
The games world has the per minute system pretty much in place, I think, which is unique to it, really. I don't know, Danny, how do you get paid?
Rarely. Yeah, no, I think it is per minute for most big games, but like it's not really my area of expertise, so I'll let you take that one.
Every contract I've signed in the last 15 years for a video game, it's always been a per minute stipulation.
Okay.
Whereas in film, you'd get a fee. They say, well, you know, here's X amount of money to do the job. Do you want to do it? And then often what will happen is that'll be the fee. And then if there's recording costs outside what the composer can do, you know, if for example, orchestra, then that would be a figure that will be agreed at a later time once the music's been written. But in games, there's a per minute fee, and that can range. It's got a massive range from a couple of hundred dollars per minute, I would imagine, to, you know, $5,000 a minute.
Cool. All right. Before we move on to our next topic, one last question for you, Mark. Now, over the cast, you talk about the differences between film and games and the advantages and disadvantages. So, do you have a general preference for what medium you'd like to work with?
What, between film and games?
Yes.
God, I like the forensic nature of doing video game scoring and figuring out how your music can be pulled apart and work in many different ways, whether that's a sort of multi-track system or a buttressing file system, in, you know, how the music is played back. I enjoy that, but there's something very satisfying about doing film, but there it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. It doesn't change. You've said exactly what you wanted to say in your music. the viewer can't suddenly change their emotion and take a U-turn, and your score has to adapt to it. It's a very fixed medium, and although that's kind of rigid in one way, it's in terms of the artistry side of what I love to do, it's quite satisfying because you say what you want to say and you don't have to second guess.
Okay. Now, speaking about a fixed medium, that just reminded me of one other question I want to ask you for. When you're brought in to do the soundtrack between when you're doing as for film as opposed to games, are you brought in like at the beginning of the project, middle, or when it's already done and you have to see the finished product and work on that?
Never the last one. Never the last one. And a kind of a mixture between at the beginning and sort of somewhere when the artistic style of the project has settled down and people know what they want the project to feel and look like. And then so they can get someone to come in and add the layer of what it should sound like. So yeah, that's kind of how it works.
Okay. All right. Before we talk a little bit more about Infamous, as we said at the beginning, because Ken and I aren't really that versed in sound design, Danny is sort of our composing ranker for this next section. So, Danny, if you have any questions regarding the composing side or the technical side of the job, would you like to ask Mark some questions?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. On your video game projects, how often do you get to work with live musicians versus sample libraries and sequencing stuff?
On the bigger projects, all the time, really. Now, I think it's accepted that if you want it to sound like an orchestra in a nice room, or a band in a good room, or a small ensemble in a tight room, it has to be a small ensemble in a tight room, a big orchestra in a big room. There seems to be an acceptance now that is money well spent. And that's been quite a battle over the years to get that accepted. And lots of people have done very good jobs in raising the awareness of the importance of human beings to translate emotion via performance into your music. Because unfortunately, samples are about as unemotional as you can get if you're trying to write emotional music.
Yeah.
The micro movements of a human being in their fingertips cannot ever and will never be expressed in a sample set. It just cannot be done. By making a sample set, you're creating a limitation. So I think there's enough people higher up the food chain in the game sort of world that are prepared to sign the check for us to go and sit in a nice room and record musicians. And then obviously there's the smaller games where it's not an option. You know, it's not an option. But I try to write towards that. If I try and convince the client who's hired me that, you know, if at all possible, can we experiment a little bit with some sound so that I can maybe record some bits here with smaller forces of players, or do something interesting in the sort of found sound world that I like to write music in also, and not necessarily try and do a full orchestral sample based score, because what's the point? Somebody else can go and write a full orchestral score with those same samples, and it will have the same timbre. It's quite nice to be given a bit of freedom. And actually, I love the smaller games for that precise reason. It's doing some smaller titles. You are given a bit more freedom on occasion just to throw it out there and see what happens and come up with ideas that maybe you wouldn't be allowed to try out on bigger titles. Not the case for Second Son, because that was experimental, but it's quite nice when people sort of don't just shove a load of Hollywood scores down your throat and say, make it sound like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I quite like the soundtrack to a couple of games that actually didn't have full orchestral forces, but which did use live musicians. Stuff like Bioshock and I think Fallout New Vegas, they I think used like a small string ensemble, and then, you know, added when they needed to, there was, you know, some samples used, but having the live strings, even though it's not full orchestra, is, you know, really, I think, adds a lot to the
massive amount. And Far Cry 2 was a sextet. Uh-huh. A string sextet, and it had the abrasiveness and the kind of hot sound that I wanted, because you could hear the strings and you could hear you could hear the fingertips trying hard, and I made a quite a rhythmically complex score for Far Cry 2, and it was and because I knew I only had a small force to write with, so I exploited it as far as I could, and I think limitations are actually good like that, because you tend to do your more interesting work when your back's up against the wall, I find, as a composer.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that goes with a lot of creative mediums. Having that kind of restrictions allows you to be more creative, because when you say, like, here's all the tools under your belt, you can do whatever you want, then your head explodes and you don't know what to do.
Yeah, totally. I can see it now, though. The next call I get to hire me, they go, well, you said on that interview that you like your back against the wall, so
here's one violin.
All tubas.
Yeah. Actually, that'd be quite cool.
Well, actually, I have a follow-up question just for the both of you. As musicians, are you fans of any other game soundtracks? Like, do you listen to any other musicians or composers within the field?
Yeah. Well, Bioshock's been mentioned already. I think that's a really strong one, because it did something a little bit different. What kind of scores? What other scores do you bring to mind, Danny, that you thought?
Yeah, so Bioshock was very cool, especially the first one. What else? I quite like the music of Jeremy Soule, although, it has that obvious, there's a very similar sound between a lot of his soundtracks, but he's very consistently good. Let's see, who else?
You could use, if you didn't know it was Jeremy Soule, and you heard a piece of music that was Jeremy Soule, could you spot it from his style?
I think so, yeah. Plus, you could probably spot it from the sample libraries he uses, which are you can sort of tell those from quite far away.
Yeah, I can actually tell that too when I hear his soundtracks. They're all pretty awesome though. He did Skyrim, he also did Guild Wars 2, and has one of my favorite songs called The Great Wall Has Fallen. I've always wanted to get other musicians' opinions on what I actually enjoy in game soundtrack and see if it's rubbish or not.
I thought Last of Us was a great soundtrack.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I don't know if this is that one. That probably is my favorite soundtrack to recently. I agree about the Jeremy Soule thing. I think he has established a kind of sound that is very close to you saying it's his.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's actually again, I always say that there's some games that are terrible, but so what comes out of it's a great soundtrack. I think there was a game called Remember Me. I actually just bought it on sale.
Yeah.
Steam, FYI. Remember Me, it's say like a weird kind of future Neo Paris world where people sustain themselves on memories of others. Mm. And had a really interesting cyberpunk soundtrack to it. And I think that was probably one of the most engaging soundtracks. I actually bought it before I bought the game. That soundtrack, because I loved it so much. So to me, I have a great love for anyone that makes music, and I think that you guys should probably check that out too and see what you guys think.
Oh, one more. I just remembered the theme from Metal Gear Solid 2, Harry Gregson Williams. That's okay. pretty cool. I don't know if you guys remember that one.
Sounds familiar. What at what point in Metal Gear 2 was that happening?
Just the opening, the main theme.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think
he does that pretty well. I guess my ears are slightly more attuned to less bombastic music on occasion. I mean, the other soundtrack I should mention and put a massive highlight around it is the Dear Esther soundtrack. I think that is a fantastic soundtrack. And the games need to do more of that. I don't mean sounding like that, but being brave like that.
Yeah.
And having some really alternative ideas. Because at the end of the day, you can get away with quite a lot in when you have a visual medium. The music can be quite experimental and not sound disjointed or at odds with what you're looking at. One thing the industry is getting better at is being braver in making those creative decisions, rather than just saying, oh crikey, I don't want the funding to be pulled, we need to do something that sounds like this because everybody loves that, and that isn't how we push this medium forward. And I really, really believe that video games are going to become a massive creative force, not just a technological force, which technology kind of leads it at the moment, and I understand that, and I understand why. But it'd be great for this medium that I really love being part of, to stretch creatively as well as technologically, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, wow, we talked about Dear Esther, though. I didn't realize how amazingly important music and atmospheric sound was until I played with the Rift, which is a head-mounted display, a virtual reality device.
Yeah.
And that's definitely going to be extremely impactful in the coming ventures as GDC, they announced a Sony VR device along with the second developer's kit for Oculus Rift. So, and I mean, there's a lot of experimentation doing 3D audio and stuff like that. So I think, again, like, I think soundtracks, musicians, composers, and people that do just the audio director is going to have a really, really big, even bigger role when it comes to the VR revolution.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying that out.
Be prepared. Well, you're lucky because the newer versions have less motion sickness issues with lower persistent screens. So you're going to vomit less, hopefully, when you try it out.
No,
that's the marketing strap line, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is another one I just randomly thought about. Is I really love, again, I really love soundtracks, but I actually listen to a lot of them on YouTube now, which is a little strange. There's just a bunch of playlists, so just people's songs, people riff from games. How do you guys feel about that as musicians, that people do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, but you can't do anything about it. You know, I don't think people really realize that we don't get any back end for doing video games. Mm-hmm. You don't get any royalties. Well, you do when you do a film score. But with games, you get a fee the music industry has grown up with artists being paid an amount for doing some work. And then the majority of what they earn is actually on royalties, you know, what makes them survive and be able to buy a house and all that sort of stuff. And it's exceptionally hard to build that into a business model of being a composer in the video game world when you know that people are just going to rip your music the second it hits iTunes or whatever and distribute it for free. But, you know, it wound me up more when it first started to happen in, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. You know, Now it's kind of become the norm, but it's slightly frustrating because it's revenue lost at the end of the day from people buying vinyl and going back home excited and listening to it until the grooves on the record wear out. You know, it's a byproduct of the technology in which we commonly listen to music on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's interesting because we're also seeing the internet have a case regarding fair use in regards to basically people posting Let's Plays and watching someone just essentially play through an entire game on YouTube as opposed to that person having to go out and spend $50, $60 and buy the game and play it that way. And we're seeing a lot of interesting pushback and discussions on this topic, such as Nintendo last year. They basically made an announcement they were forbidding game or posting footage of Nintendo games on YouTube. And then there's been cases of like famous casters like Total Biscuit who got into an argument with the developer who didn't like what he said about their game and they forced him or they complained against him and they got him like a strike against his account. So it's definitely a very murky issue.
There's actually something funny about that, about strikes against your account. Mm-hmm. The creator of the indie game, his gameplay, he actually went and posted his own gameplay of his own game with his own original soundtrack. It got canned by copyright and it got taken down. And it was, everything he created was original. Everything. Even the musician came out, composer came out and said, hey, what's going on? I'm completely allowing it. It's fine. But I guess there's like one sound or like one loop or something that happened that got taken down because it was too similar or something.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. I think part of the problem is the fact that, as we said, video games are such a new media that a lot of the laws and a lot of the rules regarding fair use, digital distribution, game ownership are still pretty much in the air. No one has made an official ruling on those topics yet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and the rules vary territory to territory. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, over here in Europe, we have the performance rights of a piece of music. So if it gets broadcast in certain places, we get a royalty for that. But in America, the performance right in a digital download is very, very different and not recognized, in fact. Mm-hmm. So some standardization needs to occur. And I'm sure it will happen at some point, but I don't think anyone is in a particularly mad rush to get it sorted, apart from maybe the record labels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think it's probably super difficult because, again, a lot of these famous YouTubers and stuff that get taken down are usually by an automated system. And it always says it's by, quote, the YouTube team, but in actuality, just a robot saying no. Mm-hmm. And there's just so many people in this world and so many people making posts, it's hard to kind of keep up with what's legitimate and what's not. So it's rough all around, both technologically and through judicial reasons.
Mm-hmm. It's quite simple, though, isn't it? If you like some music, do what we've always done and go and buy it.
I buy game soundtracks, but there's some developers that come in and they say, like, well, if the people are smart enough, and they usually become smart enough, they could just rip it directly from the game if they wanted to. Because there's just like a folder full of music, and they could just take it. For me, like when I, and that's, again, I actually just buy soundtracks. Sometimes I just buy the soundtracks over the game because I love them so much. Like the game Transistor that's coming out by, what was it, Supergiant Games? Is that who they made it?
Yeah, I think so. Guys did Bastion.
Bastion, yeah. Also another great soundtrack. Did you listen to Bastion?
Oh, it's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah, and listen to that intro song for Transistor with that like nice drum and bass and that jazz singer. Oh man, I will buy that in a heartbeat. If they offered it, I would just take it up, gobble it up.
Mm-hmm. Another example of a soundtrack that got ripped pretty quickly, I think, was Hotline Miami. Great soundtrack. I think it was one of those cases where the soundtrack, I think, was like more money than the actual game because they had so many different artists work.
Yeah, it was super kitsch. It was great. I really liked it. I like soundtracks. Soundtracks don't always have to be serious. I mean, I tend to write serious stuff and slightly darker music, but that's not how I survive in my head all the time. I enjoy listening to those scores, and I love those kind of kitsch, tongue in cheek scores that you get in video games. And what's the film called? Is it called, what a game called? Sorry, was it? Thomas was alone. You know, that's brilliant. Awesome. it's really clever, really, really effective. You know, great sound to picture. And the same with Hotline Miami. You know, it's just a superb example of how interesting you can be. It doesn't always have to be big orchestras and intellectual music. It can enjoy itself. You know.
Like the Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon soundtrack.
Yes. It's one of my favorites, too. I listen to that when I go for a run.
Nice.
Now, going back to what you said regarding games being a visual medium, have either of you played the game Rez that came out like a few years ago?
Rez, is that? Or Rezd?
Rez, R-E-Z.
No.
That's pretty old, actually. It's older than 10 years ago. 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was done by developer Tetsuka Mitsumi.
Yeah.
And also, did he also make Shatter? Because that was an amazing soundtrack too.
Maybe. I know he did Medios for the Game Boy, the DS. The reason I brought up was it was, I think, one of like, the first games that really combined music and the visual medium of video games together. It was a game basically about playing as someone with synesthesia. So the world would basically move and vibrate to the music. It's also a game that you really can't play for long periods of time because your head starts to hurt from staring at the whole game shaking all over the place.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a really, really interesting sound game that's coming out by Harmonix called Chroma, right? It's a first-person music game. First-person shooter music game, which is really crazy. And you have to actually attack people, you have to time yourself with certain beats as you go. And there's different classes with different like parts of the different areas of music that like pretty goes pretty well. There's some beta, there's some really, really early alpha stuff that was leaked and shown. Obviously, it's really kind of got banned, but I saw some of it and it had a lot of promise. So what do you guys think about music games? Do you have any favorites?
I haven't played a lot of music games, to be brutally honest with you. It sounds a bit odd, doesn't it, being a I guess the only games that I probably spent a lot of time on because of they're quite social are things like Guitar Hero, you know, which is that's just a technical exercise in music. It's not creative in the same way that Rez was. I thought Rez was fantastic, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna try and find some leaked Chroma stuff now because that sounds cool too. So no, I'm probably not the best person to ask. Sorry.
That's okay.
I played a bit of Audio Surf, which was quite fun, but again, I'm the same. Like, I haven't played too many of these, but I did enjoy Audio Surf.
I guess they're more like, I guess the music is actually more, you could probably call them more rhythm games is what they are, right?
Yeah.
Because they're technical, yeah.
Actually, there was one thing that for the charity One Big Game, I music supervised a game called Chime. Do you remember that?
Yeah, another time.
Yeah, so you know, on that one, actually, that brings me back around to my Philip Glass hobnobbing time.
Go for it.
Where we work with him and his studio over in New York, grabbing one of his existing tracks and presenting it in a way that could work. And we also work with Paul Hartnell from the Orbital on a track. And who else was in there? Well, they're the two that spring to mind where it really worked. But yeah, that was a music game, and that was cool. I really, really enjoyed that. So there's a music game that I thought was really well executed. So I'm not as dumb as I thought I was in this area.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the big ones that people remember is Chime.
Yeah, I really liked how that game worked. I don't think it did particularly well, but it certainly was executed in a really slick fashion, and the music content was really varied and exciting, and it showed what you could do with many different styles of music, because it had like a sort of, you know, more breakbeaty stuff, more electro stuff, and then it had obviously modern orchestral. It really was very varied and took a lot of piecing together. It was quite a complicated mix, but playing it just felt brilliant. It just felt so comfortable.
Right, and again, it's going to stick out in one of those, and when people look back at the music games, they're going to see Chime and your name attached to it. There you go.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be dining out on Chime for years to come.
By the way, so I guess to lead on to Second Son, what did you think of the original soundtrack to the game series?
I think all the soundtracks to Infamous have been really strong in their own way. Obviously, the first one was very different from the second one. I really like how the first one worked. I'm a big fan of Amon Tobin, having worked with him before on Guest Like Black Monday for Sony Studios in London. I love that sound palette when it's done really well, that kind of found sound approach to music. So, and Amon is one of the best guys at it. I've been a fan of the Infamous scores, and most notably the first one that resonated with me.
All right, and I think the second one was the one set in set in New Orleans, right?
Fake New Orleans, isn't it?
It was.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't really New Orleans.
But right, of course they couldn't, yeah. But, I mean, I think they're trying to try to bring in that sound. Because I remember there's a couple of songs that do stick out to me, like Pushing and Shoving. And
yeah.
It had like a dual soundtrack. It was a little weird, Red and Blue.
It was good. It was a really good soundtrack. I just, between the two, I prefer the first one. But that's just personal taste. But I totally admire the work that was done on the second one.
Cool. Before we talk a little bit more about Infamous, Danny, do you have any other composing questions for Mark?
Let me think. Have you written any like standalone or quote unquote like classical music in your free time?
Yeah, I'm doing a project now that is going to take me about a year and a half to do because it involves quite a bit of traveling around and a bit of a crew to go with me, but that's the first, I think, in 15, the reason I'm doing it is because I spent 15 years writing to picture, and I started off not doing that, but I wrote originally very visual inspired music, but it wasn't sound to picture, so I've kind of been missing it for a long time, and so I'm going to spend some time this year and next year pulling together this project, which will involve players from around the world, but including classical players. I'm kind of at the very beginning of the planning stage of this project. So you've kind of asked an interesting time for me, because I literally am having meetings now with people that are part of the team. But how the hell are we going to do this project? it's crazy, but it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it sounds fun. Album or a...
It's kind of everything. It's a documentary as well as an album, as well as an audio visual live performance. So it takes it's got sort of three forms to it. And I'm more than happy to say more about it later on. But right now, I don't want to confuse people, because I'm at the stage where I'm just sort of shaping it a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's got a really good core, sort of idea behind it. And I'm just seeing what logistically can work and what can't, because it's quite, bit out there. it's a sort of project that's a real passion of mine now to focus. It's called Territories, I'll give you that.
Okay, we'll look it up.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing to look up yet.
Exactly. We can create the first documentations of it.
You've got an exclusive.
Okay. Any other questions, Annie?
None that are coming to my mind right now.
Okay. So
Danny, we could collaborate. Why don't we do something?
Yeah, sure. I'd be up for it.
Yeah.
All right. So to wrap things up for the cast, then, let's talk a little bit more about Infamous Second Son and the work that went into that. So I guess my first question for you, Mark. Now, earlier you mentioned when you first started out, in order to basically get the job to do these game soundtracks, you approach them with a demo. For Second Son, did you approach them, or did they approach you to the soundtrack?
Well, I've been quite close to that audio team for a few years prior to Second Son. But just on a sort of hanging out, if they came to London, I'd go and hang out at the studio with them, and we kind of became friends, you know, with some of the key guys there. And we share a lot of our philosophy and what we want music to be achieving in video games. So then we started to threaten each other that we were going to work with each other soon. and then there was I was looking at one other project prior to Second Son that studio managed, which fortunately I didn't get, but it was the first chance we'd creatively really banged heads together, and it worked really well. Mm-hmm. And for various reasons, I didn't end up working on that project. But quite soon after that process, they flagged up Second Son to me, and I went away and did a pitch, you know, with a couple of other guys did pitches. But I kind of knew that we all wanted to work together. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't behind closed doors kind of attitude. So I felt really confident doing the pitch that there was a genuine want for them to work with me, and it was reciprocated. And then I got the call saying, right, when can you start? So that was kind of how that came about. So I did have the pitch for it, and this is what people have to be prepared for in the business, is to pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch. And, you know, pitching is sometimes abused by companies, and sometimes it's a very valuable exercise. But on this occasion, I didn't feel like I was just pitching for the sake of pitching, just to add the numbers up, which often happens. That was how the guys, Chuck and Jonathan over there, introduced me to the project. So, and it was a no-brainer. I wanted to do it. It was where they wanted to go, even though the stylistic blueprint was a bit up in the air still at that phase. I knew that we'd have a hell of a lot of fun on this project doing it, because they really wanted to experiment.
Cool. Now, for people who aren't familiar with Infamous, what kind of music or what kind of genre did you compose for Second Son?
Well, we named it Digital Danger in the end. But it was basically this process. I would take organic sounds and see how far I could take them to make them not sound very organic anymore. And I would then take very electronic sources and see how human and real I could make them sound, and trying that formed a lot of the bed of the music, the sort of bulk of it. the director, Nate Fox, he was really keen to somehow suggest Seattle, but not make everything sound like Nirvana. And we kind of pulled a team of really interesting musicians who had good ad-libbing skills, mm-hmm. improvisational skills. And so we had sessions with these musicians in Los Angeles and San Francisco. Some of it was scored out, but 90% of the time, to be honest, what was on the page got moved around because something I wrote for guitar, for the guitarist on the session was a guy called Carl Restivo. Something I'd written for him. The cellist, Martin Tillman, who's world-renowned experimental cellist player, he would be looking at the score because he'd also have the guitar parts in front of him and he'd just start playing around on his cello. He's the guy that did the Joker sound for Batman. That's him. I go, no, okay, it's not on the guitar anymore. It's now all on the cello. You know, it was one of those kinds of sessions because it just had this, I didn't imagine that how Martin would make it sound. So it was quite free in that respect.
Well, now earlier you mentioned that I think you had 5 months, you're going to 5 months of work on the soundtrack. Were there any other interesting or unique challenges involving making the soundtrack for Second Son?
I think, honestly, the biggest challenge was getting to a point where we thought this was the sound to Second Son. And like I say, that involved an awful lot of mangling of sounds. Mm-hmm. In a way that wouldn't be too unfamiliar to the infamous One fans, you know, Amon Tobin's work. But then also this really organic side of making things feel very alive and not overly programmed. Mm-hmm. Like I said at the beginning, you know, I think it was often the mistakes that were the bits that stayed in.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a big push not to polish this soundtrack too much, to keep it as honest and organic as possible. Even though we were using all sorts of different ways of creating sound, from players to synthesizers to going out to junkyards and smashing up cars, going into car parks, you know, an awful lot of sound design techniques were used in making this soundtrack. So making that fit was the challenge. Once the sort of balance started to feel right, then we all kind of ran with it really well and everybody knew what they were doing.
Okay. Now, for people who aren't familiar with the Infamous series, it is a series where you basically choose to play a game either good or evil. I'm not sure they have, like, specific names, you know, like they do, like, Mass Effect. But with the Infamous soundtrack, did you sort of have to compose the music around whether the player is playing as, you know, the good side or the evil side?
Slightly, not too much. The most we sort of went into that is I had to score, I guess, what are commonly referred to as stingers,
mm-hmm.
but quite long stingers. You know, some of them lasted 30 seconds. But when you have the decision making moments, then these stingers kind reflect your decision a little bit. So you feel you know that if you've gone down the bad path, that the sonic sound initially will be representative of bad and then obviously the same good. But then the music was then very much crafted depending on what the level wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
In a very sound to picture kind of way, in a linear as possible way as we could make it feel that we didn't want people to know the soundtrack was interactive, really. Mm-hmm. It wanted to do what great film scores do, and you just feel it move in the right direction. It's only when, you know, there are nice moments in film when and video games when the sound design and everything drops out and it is just a moment for the music to do its thing, and I love being given those opportunities. But with a game like Second Son, the game just sort of, the intention was to make it flow as nicely as possible and work symbiotically with what was going on with Delsin at the time.
Cool. Ken, Danny, do you have any questions regarding Second Son as well?
This is a little random too, but are you going to offer the soundtrack to download while the game's on sale?
It's released.
Oh, it's already released to buy?
I've been wanting companies to do this for ages, and this is the first time I've been part of a project where they pre-released the soundtrack. So that came out yesterday, the soundtrack. And you can hear snippets of it on, I think PlayStation have a blog where they've got one of my tracks called Vandal King on, just to listen on SoundCloud. Obviously all the preview stuff on iTunes and Amazon or wherever, you know, all the places they're selling the soundtrack. But yeah, the soundtrack is out and, it's getting some storming reviews already. I'm really happy. I'm pleased that people are digging it. I've only seen 5 stars so far, so I'm scared to go back and look at what people. I want to leave it on a high.
Well, yeah, I think that the people will appreciate the soundtrack. From what I heard, it was pretty awesome so far. And again, but people are also really what do you call it, polarized whenever they give reviews. You know, they're like, oh, 5 stars, 1 star, 5 stars or 1 star. They don't go in between, really.
But
but it's cool because I'm always. Whenever I look for a game, I always look for the soundtrack too. And a lot of independent, at least like contractual composers and whatever, they put their stuff on Bandcamp right away when the game comes out. And this is really cool that they also pre-released the soundtrack to the game, which is a good trend, I would say, for a lot of musicians that want to, you know, make more than just whatever was paid for initial project.
Yeah, yeah. Big props to Bandcamp, by the way. It's a great way to buy music if anyone needs convincing.
What do you guys think of SoundCloud, by the way? Just again, another random aside.
It's a quick way to get people to hear your music.
I think it's a really good tool. I don't know how many pages I've had to like to download things from SoundCloud, but that's all I use my Facebook for, is to like things, and then I get sent to SoundCloud for a taste of what the musician has to give. But
it's good that it's, you know, it's the leading method in which people can do that, you know, and I like it for that reason. It's very easy to use and it's easy for people to find music on, which I guess is the key reason it's successful. But if you want to buy music, Bandcamp.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I think the most interesting thing to me about SoundCloud is just the way that you can comment during a song. So I just wonder if you put one of your songs up, what would people say during the different moments?
Well, go on to the PlayStation blog and they're doing it on Battle King. It's awesome.
they're like, I always like when the people say, wait for it, like, wait for what? Oh, here it is. Awesome.
Yeah.
The drop.
Yeah. Actually, this is really funny, but on SoundCloud, there's an account called Sickest Drops or like the Greatest Drops. And they make this huge build up to like what you think is a dubstep drop, and they just put in things like Fish Filet commercial, or they put in some Nick Carter or whatever to mess with you. I just find that one of those really hilarious novelty accounts.
Yeah, sorry about that. But I think I'm not writing music.
So how much goes back to you when they put those soundtracks up on iTunes?
In terms of royalties?
Yeah.
I mean, major publishers, game publishers, tend to operate a bit like labels do, you know, the same kind of deal that you would on if you were signed to Universal or Sony or whatever. You know, it's not equivalent to an indie deal, but they're not an indie company. So you don't expect them to say, hey, it's 50-50, we love you. it's what one would expect working for a big company, to be honest. You know, It doesn't keep me awake at night worrying about it.
Well, it does, at least it gives it more life, you know, after the game's released, because I think that in the end of the day, like I said before, the soundtracks usually stand the test of time and people go back and look to a way to purchase it or obtain it.
Yeah. And soundtracks shouldn't be just this geeky thing that people like us love, you know. If you think of the impact that, you know, people like Ennio Morricone have had on the world, or John Williams, and you know, the composers of that stature, their music is loved by all sorts of people, and you know, the games industry should be really proud about some of the output that comes out of it on a creative level with the music, and we should shout about it a bit more because it's justified shouting about it.
Yeah, and no, just by coincidence, because again, I think that video game music is getting more recognized. Baba Yetto was recognized and won its first award. It was for the artist's personal track, personal album, but it was the Civilization IV main theme. So it was the first one ever to be awarded. Haha, take that.
That was a few years back at one, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That was cool that it was the first
Journey,
one.
Journey winning the Grammy last year. That was a big moment in for video game soundtracks. A very, very big moment, I think, in getting it recognised. I think an awful lot of important people who we may not really like their opinions in the media entertainment world, in terms of the amount of power that they wield, but they could not ignore that moment.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Which is why we're saying that we start seeing that turn, you know, that
games aren't just some kid medium. It's heading in the right direction, basically.
It's positive, isn't it? It's all positive. Like people who see how I work on video games, who know me through film, say, well, God, why on earth are you working in the video games industry? Because it seems like a right pain in the backside. Yeah. I'm like, well, no, it's different. You just have to, I grew up knowing nothing else from that way of working. You know, I was either in a band or writing music for video games. And then later on, I started doing some films. And, it's a really vibrant industry, you know, and as the economy recovers, it's getting a bit more investment back into it as well to allow us to do some really exciting things.
Yeah, and I think there's some big titans in the industry too. Like you talk about John Williams, so we have Nobuo Uematsu, right? Everyone knows his scores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I think Jeremy Soule's getting up there too as being super recognized as a composer.
Yeah, I mean, loads of people love the Oblivion score and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. How many covers of the songs are up there? It's tons. And his original score is great.
There's also, I think, Jasper Kidd. I think that's his name. He does, like, I think, for Hitman and several other.
Yeah, Jasper's one of the interesting guys out there. I like his work. He's a good programmer. That's kind of what I really like about his style. When he's got some, he likes to play with vintage synthesizers, and I like to play with vintage synthesizers. there are some people emerging, you know, and you know, I for myself, you know, I'm on the by the end of the year, I'll be on my first studio film in Hollywood. So I wouldn't have got to that stage if I hadn't have had the background of writing lots of music for video games. So it's given me a really nice foot up into that world, and I'll be one of the first few people in the video games land who started off in video games doing Hollywood features, you know, because awesome. We've got plenty of Hollywood guys coming to try and do our jobs. so it was about time we got stuck into their field, and as the stigma of you're a video game composer is being lifted, like I say, thanks to situations like Journey winning a Grammy, etc. But why not, at the end of the day, good music is good music.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're at the very top too. Think about it. I mean, Second Son, everyone's eyes are on it because the PS4 needs a title, right? And everyone's looking for Second Son, so they're going to be loving that soundtrack too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a killer game. So it's if you like those kind of games, it's a really exciting ride for your eyes and for your thumbs.
And ears as well, hopefully.
How did I not say ears? Jesus.
You're so caught up by the visuals.
There I am. Secret.
That actually leads me up to another question. How much work do you guys do or get for trailers, right? Because trailers are always coming out, and they always need some sort of music to accompany them. How much do you get approached for that kind of work?
As in the music from the game?
Yeah.
Being used on the trailer for the game.
That or making a song or a track specifically for a trailer?
You do. I mean, when you're a gigging composer, if someone likes what you do and there's a trailer that kind of fits your style, then you know, every so often the phone rings and says, you know, can you do this this trailer for us? I'm not brilliant at doing trailers. I think there's some guys that are really, really good at it. And unless they really do want what I do stylistically, if they want me to suddenly turn around a Hans Zimmer Inception droney thing, which was all the rage for a couple of years, then you know, there's producers who do that. You know, that's what I go back to, that point about being, there's producer composers and artist composers, and they're kind of a different breed between the two of them. And the guys who do a lot of trailers tend to be the producer guys, because they really know how to make sounds kick. rather than they're not that hung up on the writing side of it. They're more proficient in making it sound amazing, and that's what trailers want. You know, it's all about hyper.
This leads me to another question. It's just kind of what I just remembered now, but how was it working with the MMO genre compared to the other genres you worked on? Because you did the OST for Secret World.
Yeah. That was such a nice project, working with Simon Poole on it over at Funcom. They're still alive.
Well, no, they made two of my favorite adventure games, Longest Journey and Dreamfall.
Dreamfall, yeah.
Kickstarter was just recent, by the way, if you funded it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. I think Simon's involved with that, which is good. Yeah, to be honest, creatively, there's no difference for me. Simon loves the same music I love. On the sort of geekier side of music appreciation clubs, and so that was a really easy project in terms of, like, we both like these kinds of sounds, this experimental approach. How can we make it fit this kind of fantasy world of a secret world? And if it had been a first person game with the same backdrop, it wouldn't have changed how I would have written. I probably would have had to write more combat music. That's probably it, actually. You know, the games that Call of Duties of the world and those kinds of adrenaline rush games are, they tend to have a much higher proportion of action cues than to stealthy cues or the cerebral stuff that I tend to write more commonly. So yeah, that would be the difference between MMO and a game like Second Son, I guess.
Oh, okay. Well, by the way, I just realized your friend Simon, he did the soundtrack of Dreamfall, at least parts of it, looking at the Wikipedia on it. That's pretty awesome. It's one of my favorites.
Cool. I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say. I know a little bit about that game, but the new one, but I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say.
I'm sure they're real chill. Come on, they made their own company, Red Thread Games.
Red Thread, yeah. Ragnar set up Red Thread with another chap.
He seems like a cool dude. I'm sure he can say whatever.
he's quite aloof, actually.
Really?
He's never said thank you for working on his soundtrack for Secret World yet.
I'm going to go to the forums right now and tell him.
Once official thank you from Ragnar Torquist. Because I did email him to say thanks. I always speak to the directors after, just because if they've made a great game, my music to hang on, I've got to say thank you, because they've been my muse for that period of time, and on a project like Secret World, I really enjoyed the process. It was a really creative project to be part of, so it was I'm not bitter.
I wonder if the new Dreamfall, the Kickstarter Dreamfall chapters, which is why I'm saying he's probably more connected with people because of Kickstarter, because you have to be. But I wonder if Simon is involved in that soundtrack too, is it someone different?
I couldn't possibly say.
just send a mail. Okay. You doing it?
let's just say Simon's got a great ear.
All right.
I think I have pretty much run out of questions to ask. So we can start wrapping this up, unless Ken, Dan, do you have any other questions for Mark regarding Infamous?
I don't think so. Apart from just, off-topic shit, like, what games have you been playing recently? If any.
I've been teaching my son to play chess.
Old school.
On the iPad.
I really love the soundtrack for chess. It's awesome.
It's one of those soundtracks you just don't want to touch.
By the way, there was a brilliant release of a game where you can play like a physics-based chess game where you move the pieces yourself with like a little invisible hand. And I've watched a lot of videos, and pretty much what they do is, instead of playing the game, they just smack all the pieces off the board.
I better not introduce my son to that one. But I'm not a pushy parent. I just want to put that out there. He came back wanting to learn how to play chess. So
you should make him play all the games you worked on, and then see, like, what do you think of that soundtrack? Pretty good, right? You liked it?
Yeah. Well, that's the last game I've been playing, actually. So I did a little, like I said, I enjoy these iOS style games, you know, these handheld games, because you get a chance to basically do what you want a little bit and have some fun and just explore other areas, especially when you've come off the back of something quite intensive like Second Son. So I did the score to a game called If, which is like a fantasy role play game, which is very sort of young audience. And so Samson, my boy, has been playing If for the last few weeks. So there you go. I have been playing a game, and it is my own.
Well, hey, you don't need to tell him that you did it. You have to surprise him. Be like, aha, you do love my stuff.
I ask him if he likes it, and if he says no, I don't say I did it.
Perfect.
Great.
Okay. I guess before we wrap things up, Mark, are you working on any other video game soundtracks in the coming months?
I've got, yeah, I'm a bit, and I did check, actually, if I'm allowed to mention anything about it, and I was told if I said anything about it, I'd have my studio burnt down and my knees. So I can't say anything about it, guys, but I'm more than happy to reconvene sometime in the future when I can, and fill you in.
Cool. Right, and Danny, do you have any upcoming projects that you would like to talk about?
I don't think I have anything super relevant unless you happen to live in Dublin and want to come to a concert next week.
No, I can't.
I'll get my tickets tomorrow.
I would love to.
Go for it. Boat ride.
All right. So I think with that, we can wrap things up. And Infamous Second Son, I believe that's coming out tomorrow. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, out tomorrow.
Which by the time this podcast airs should be, well, today. So go out and buy it.
Don't forget to get the soundtrack. To say, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We'll put the soundtrack link in the description, by the way.
Yeah, buy the soundtrack. That's the thing you really need. The game will last you for an amount of time. The soundtrack will be with you for life.
It's not a console exclusive. You can get the soundtrack on anything that's a computer. So there you go.
Exactly.
Any device.
Awesome. All right. So I think with that we can start wrapping things up. Mark, Danny, it was a pleasure talking to you today.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, it was nice to be here.
Yeah, hopefully we can get together again at some point, either talking more about soundtrack design or just talking about games and what we like to play.
Yeah, I'm happy to join in on those conversations if you ever want my thoughts.
Yeah, sure. All right. And Ken, as always, it was great having you on.
No problem.
So with that said, we're going to wrap things up for the Perceptive Podcast this week. As always, for those of you listening, if you would like to contribute to Game Wisdom, either by writing a guest post for the site or by being a future podcast guest, feel free to send me an email. You can find all the information, guidelines, and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. So, with that said, we're going to end things here. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.